When should Christians obey the authority of the state? When should they resist? Welcome to the Good Word Today. My name is Mathilde Frey. I am professor of the Old Testament at Walla Walla University. I will be your host for this week together with Jody Washburn and Dave in conversation about our Sabbath School lesson on Daniel chapter 3. Our theme today is God is able. How do we understand that when we are in the middle of the deepest crisis in life?
Well, I would say sometimes we don't.
Yes.
Until it's over. I've always believed that the actions of God in prospect are never as clear as the actions of God in retrospect.
Yes.
And so I think, when you ask that question, Matilda, it seems to me that one of the lessons we learned from chapter 3, which is a very, very dramatic story. I mean, when I think about the story and how it played out in public, these young men with standing face to face the greatest monarch of antiquity and saying, what were the words that you used, Jody? It doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah. I think we should read that. In verse 16, the three young men, they say to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. And then they go on saying, if we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able. He is able. So that's our theme, right? Yes. God is able. He is able to save us from it. And he will rescue us from your hand, O king. And then this is the part that strikes me, I think, the deepest. But, verse 18, even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up.
Now see, that to me, that has stirred my little soul since I was a boy. You know, what were these guys made of that they fearlessly stand up and in front of all the bigwigs and the king himself, they tell him to his face, even if you destroy us, we're not going to participate in this. And, when I read them, I realize that people of conscience are beautiful, but they're very dangerous, especially when somebody is trying to control circumstances, because people of conscience are not persuaded by pressure or coercion. They're
yes.
not. They're driven by internal convictions. And, I've always found it challenging wanting to be that kind of a person, that it really doesn't matter. When somebody is doing something that contravenes an issue of conscience, they need to be told, I'm not going to participate. And, if there's a video store in heaven or an archive, I want to go and see this video. I want to see, because among other things, I want to see the look on Nebuchadnezzar's face. I think he was absolutely incredulous. What are you talking about? You three
unheard of
punks. Yeah. I brought from far away, you little whippersnappers, you're going to tell me to my face that you're not going to do this? You're done.
Yeah.
He had to save face by getting rid of them, see, in a very dramatic way. So heat the furnace,
One of the things that strikes me when I read biblical literature that came up in the time of the exile is I wouldn't say it's completely new, but it's certainly much more front and center than it had been previously, and that is a wrestling with responsibility. Who is responsible? Even in Daniel, you start out like, who gave them into the hand, right? Like, God gave these people into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar. So there's this portrayal of God with this ultimate responsibility for the cosmic outplaying of this big story. But at the same time, there's a stunning conviction, like you've said, in the hearts of these young men that even though we can't control everything, right, we have significant responsibility to act in a certain way, right? Following these convictions, it makes me think of an article I read recently. It's from the New Yorker, and it's an interesting story. They title it "A Powerful Statement of Resistance from a College Student on Trial in Moscow." And this young 19 or 21 year old university student is apparently on trial, or was a few weeks ago, and he's on trial for being an extremist.
By whose definition?
I you know, he has apparently publicly accused the leadership in Russia of viewing power as an end in itself.
Oh, wow.
Okay, and he stands before the court before being taken off to jail. And he says, "For me, I consider Christian ethics to include two things, responsibility and love." And he talks about how you know, it's Christianity itself is based on Jesus, who took individual responsibility for the burden of the world, right? Accepted responsibility. And then how Christians are asked the same. Like in Ezekiel, you have this playing out in exilic literature. Mm. Individual responsibility.
But to go back to your original question, Matilda, I think that there are times of adversity when we simply press forward believing that God is able, but we can't see it in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, but if we press on in faith, we will know it.
And I also think that, yes, we do press on in those moments, but it is not, at the same time, there is a certain fear that you experience. I would say personally from my life, when I was a little child and was standing while everybody else was sitting.
Yeah.
And I stood shaking, but I stood.
Of course, yes. Mm-hmm.
And so when I think of these three young men, I can feel that too, when everybody was down on the ground and they stood out.
Yes, I don't think their statement was an arrogant statement. They were not trying to bait the king.
Yes.
They were saying, look, here's where we are.
How do we, I mean, I would like us to think more about what that looks like now for us. Like, what does it look like to wrestle with that balance between God's, you know, ultimate power in the world, right? Ultimately, but at the same time, our responsibility. How do you even tease that apart? Maybe in marriage, and if you have a huge deadline at school that seems insurmountable, if you're faced with a house foreclosing or some, you know what I mean? Something that just seems so hard, you don't know how you're going to face it. How do you tease out what is my responsibility right now? And what do I leave or release?
So go ahead and ask the hard questions, Jody.
I suppose the whole book of Daniel is about discernment and wisdom coming from God. Yes.
But I think that the Holy Spirit helps guide people in cases like that. Because, you know, sometimes our resistance is merely out of stubbornness or personal preference.
Yeah.
You know, these young men were driven by an issue of conscience that was very deeply seated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one distinction I would make.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I just would like to help us also understand a little bit of the background to the chapter, because it can be only about the three young men and then that golden image versus the dream image in chapter 2. We pointed out the parallelism and the link between chapter 2 and 3. But between the chapter 2 and chapter 3 are several years. And during this time, Nebuchadnezzar was consolidating
power.
His empire and his power.
Mm-hmm.
But he has come to a point where the small regions that he has taken under his hand are starting to revolt.
Oh.
So again, Jeremiah actually gives us some insight about that. And there are also some texts outside of the Bible that give us clues that that happened in Nebuchadnezzar's world, where the smaller states that he had taken over and then taken people captive started to come together and build coalitions against Nebuchadnezzar. So when he brings everybody from all the places of his kingdom to Babylon, and then creates this huge, enormous concert where everybody is to give worship to the king, it is to consolidate
his
power.
So that would have made the action of these Hebrew young men much worse.
It would, because now they were associated with the revolt, people of the revolt back in Jerusalem, where, who was it, King Zedekiah had had brought together the Edom and all those smaller nations to Jerusalem to set up a huge revolt against Nebuchadnezzar. And we are here, 595-94 BC, around that time. And so Nebuchadnezzar is forced to bring everybody back under his
head. Or to at least try.
Then I want to see the video even more now, because if that dynamic there, you can see that his anger became instantaneous. I mean, this cannot be tolerated.
Yeah.
So in the furnace, there is a fourth one.
Mm. Yeah, what do you make of? We need to talk about that.
Yes.
Because that's another video I want to see, you know, because the king points it out. He said, look, aren't there four people in there now?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he looks like a son
of man.
When like
of God. Uh-huh. And in the Aramaic text here that we have, he's one who is as a son of the gods.
Oh, yeah.
That is Nebuchadnezzar.
And bar in Aramaic simply means of the type of. So son of man, of the type of, the category of human, son of God, right? One of the son of the gods, of the type of divine beings.
He's now in the furnace with these young men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, they come out totally unharmed, not even smelling of smoke. Mm-hmm. And yet the ropes are burned off.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What do you make of that? I don't know. I mean, I've always thought it was some divine being. I mean, Jesus himself, maybe.
Well, Christian commentaries argue here for the incarnate Christ in the fire, who is with the three young men.
Yeah.
But for Nebuchadnezzar, he is also a divine being. Not just for the Hebrews or for the Christians today. He is also a divine being. And Nebuchadnezzar recognizes that there is nobody who would be able to save anyone in that furnace than the... Yeah,
evidenced by the fact that the soldiers who threw them in all died.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the effect on Nebuchadnezzar is what?
Probably realizing that there's something going on that's outside of his control. Because I'm just thinking, you know, with all the divination and everything, it was always the people were initiating, trying to discern divine will or to somehow cause a certain outcome to come with like an incantation or one of these mechanisms. Mm-hmm. And the God, this God is portrayed as coming of his own accord, sort of, I will be there in the midst of the suffering, in the furnace, even when I haven't been called. It's not like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are recorded as saying, come pull us out with your own hand, right? It's this unbidden God is initiating that presence.
See, I think that goes back to your first question today, Matilda, is that how do you endure the suffering? Where do you find God? And I think that there are many testimonies of people who have endured suffering, that in the midst of their suffering, if they are faithful to God, he shows up at some point. Not as dramatically as here necessarily. But what lesson do you draw from this chapter?
Now that son of the gods will become a theme throughout the book.
Oh, yes.
Right? Yes. So thank you, Jody and Dave, for this conversation today, and also Abby Wissink, our engineer, and to all the listeners of Good Word. My name is Matilda Fry.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.